everybody. It's another Wednesday today, and it is time for Snipes and Stripes on NoFilter.net. I am Jeremy Roenick, teamed with probably the best teammate of all time. I can say that now because he was a referee before. He was not my teammate before, but he's a great teammate now. Tim Peel, how are we doing this Wednesday? By the way, it's a big day today. You know that, right?
I know that, buddy. I'm doing awesome, but I hope you're doing awesome because today's your birthday to all our listeners. And happy birthday, buddy. We love you, and I'm so happy that we got to do the show on your birthday.
And look who's joining us. Look who's joining us on the show. Obviously, you know, Terry Ryan is he's a great guy. He's not so much great as computers go. And he's on the show right now, and he doesn't even realize it. He's talking to our producer right now. So he's having a couple issues with the sound. But this is going to be great when he actually hears that we're talking to him and talking about him. But he is literally making waves in the National Hockey League and through the hockey world right now. Now he's off. See, so we're going to have a lot of fun with Terry once he figures out his all of this computer stuff. But I want to say thanks to Whiskey in the Wild, which is my whiskey, chocolate whiskey company, for one of our sponsors. Tim, you can jump on with another one. Absolutely. Of our great sponsors is Bet Online. They're fantastic. And I've been ice cold in the gambling situation now. Shit.
Well, listen, buddy, with the NFL playoffs going on right now and the NHL and the NBA season in full swing, Bet Online has you covered with all the up-to-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odd lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use your promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% discount and welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online is where the game starts. Thank you, Bet Online. I've been red hot, buddy. I've won the last 3 weeks. So
I did something that is so hard to do. So I'm in a football pool all year, and it's coming to the end. And our bets were, we had to make 6 bets over the weekend. You had to make 1 bet per game for the weekend on NFL. I went 0-6. I went 0-6. Tim, do you know how hard that is to do? I went 0-6. I couldn't try to go 0-6 and go 0-6 again.
That's classic. Listen, today's your birthday. What are the plans? Dinner tonight?
Well, considering I have mush on my forehead, I'm actually in Florida right now. I'm in Orlando. And there's Terry Ryan. We're going to see if he can figure out all this stuff. See? You see what happens? You see what happens when you're a hockey player? The tech part of life just doesn't compute.
What are you doing in Florida?
So I'm in Florida right now. I'm in the LPGA Tournament of Champions / Celebrity Tour. Nice. So we have a celebrity tournament that's teamed with all the winners from last year's LPGA Tour. So we're playing with all the best female golfers in the world. And tomorrow's the first day. It's a 4-rounder. Played the member guest. I mean the pro am today, and it was amazing. This golf course is just lightning fast. And let's see if you can do it.
Have you seen Brooke Henderson?
I saw her on the range today. Terry, can you hear us?
Well, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. This is amazing what technology can do for us. It's amazing. I love it.
I apologize. I got my own podcast. I've been doing these for a couple of days, and I've never run into that problem. So as long you can hear me.
No, it's all good.
We can hear you great.
Terry, the biggest problem that you have right now is I know they're still using dial-up internet in Newfoundland, okay? So that
wouldn't be the first time I heard that, and it's probably true.
We'll get into the Newfoundland stuff. By the way, I've never met a person from Newfoundland that I did not love, honestly.
And you know what, JR, we got a lot in common with your folk. You're from Boston, right?
Yes, I am. Yep. Yes, I am. So, yep.
I have a degree. My hockey career ended earlier than I thought it would, and I went back to school, and I got a folklore degree with an English minor. And I've learned that a lot of people in Boston, Chris Nyland's family are one, that have roots. You know, people would come over here before the borders and everything way back hundreds of years ago. St. John's, where I'm living, is the oldest, arguably, but one of the oldest cities in North America. People would, it's the furthest easterly. So people would come over from Europe and land here. And a lot of people from here went to Philly and Boston a lot. So if you go back far enough, it doesn't surprise me. It's the same kind of people, you know.
Terry, you're from St. John's, Newfoundland, and I'm from St. John, New Brunswick. And so what you just said is bang on. St. John, New Brunswick's the same thing. That's why the people in St. John, New Brunswick have such a close friendship with the people in Boston, is because the immigrants came over and they landed in St. John, New Brunswick as well. So the reason I'm able to give you the shot about the internet dial-up is because I grew up in the Maritimes, buddy. Okay. Well,
you know, we're very self-deprecating people, and we're, you know, I take that with a grain of salt. As you know,
yes. Do you know why Newfies do it doggy style?
No, but I can't wait to find
out. So they can watch hockey night.
So they can both watch the hockey game. They're the best people in the world. They're the biggest hockey fans. We also have something in common too, Terry. We were both drafted 8th overall. In the National Hockey League draft, which is an amazing feat for you and for me, which is amazing. Take us back to that time in 1995. You got drafted by one of the most storied teams of all time, and you being from Newfoundland, Montreal must have been one of your favorite teams, or at least a team that was revered up there, and you got drafted 8th overall by them. Take us back to that time in 1995.
I was a Habs fanatic.
I love it.
Yeah, my favorite players, Bob Gainey, Chris Nyland. And I love Nyland. I think people forget because of all the, you know, he's a tough guy and, you know, knuckles and all that tough, you know, layer that he wears and he walks around with. And even back then, you know, he wasn't as layered. Knuckles is a very articulate guy. People don't see that. But he had 20 goals a couple of times, right? He liked to throw the mitts, but he's a good player. And I grew up, the first game I ever saw in Montreal, my dad was a big fan. My dad played in the WHA with the Minnesota Fighting Saints, played in the OHA, had his own pro hockey experience. So, you know, I was very old school. His favorite team was the Canadiens. So I grew up, and I'm an only child, so I grew up. My dad and mom would make me read or write each night for 15 minutes to a half hour. Now, it could be Rolling Stone magazine. It could be the hockey news. So I just, once I developed an affinity for it, musically, it was the Beatles. I still love them. My daughter's name is Penny Lane. And when it came
it was awesome.
All like Fleur and the history of the Canadians. Red Fisher, who didn't treat me very well when I got up there, but I really was a fan of his. And I, you know, so I was ready.
Penny Lane's Almost Famous also, right? The Penny Lane from Almost Famous. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, all my experiences with that name, and it's my favorite Beatles song. It's really positive. It's introspective. They're writing about their own experiences. I find the Beatles, the whole idea transcends music to me. The message was love. It was a time I think the world needed the Beatles. And, you know, I'm biased. I'm a fan, but I just love their whole shtick and everything that they stood for. And I think, you know, they did a lot of firsts. You know, I'm a creative person. I'm not a musician, but I really respect that. And I think, you know, they were the first to really to write all their own music and to grow their hair long and have a different perspective and you know, to stop touring and use the studio. And there's so many things.
It's awesome.
And my dad, again, guys, he used to collect all these albums, right? And on Friday nights, Dad has his beers on Friday nights. He used to drink a little bit too much. When he came home, my mom separated, kicked him out. And he came back and he said, "Give me my Fridays, Gail, and we're good." That's why me and all the boys hang out on Friday nights. You guys can pick from these albums. And, you know, we would DJ for his senior hockey team, which was, you know, it's like semi-pro. We take it very seriously, their senior hockey. And, you know, they'd have their parties, so I'd be going through. And, you know, the vinyl, I'd like Bob Seger, and it wasn't limited to the Beatles. Now we got 1,000 plus albums. So I would, you know, read the liner notes, and eventually, you know, you start to pick up these little things back when you actually had to read books, you know, and read things.
And, yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, so the Habs and hockey were as important as music and the arts community, even though I was writing when I was younger and everything. I was a little bit embarrassed about it. And that started to come out on the bus and bus trips in junior and getting to know the boys. And so the arts world always was here, and hockey was here, and hockey became here. It was always a love of mine, but it doesn't surprise me that I ended up having something to do with the arts world. It was always a little bit of a goal of mine.
Yeah, but it was Montreal. It was Montreal. Sorry, Tim, just real quick, but it was Montreal. And by the way, happy birthday. It was your birthday the other day on Sunday. And it's my birthday today. So
I know.
Listen, we have a lot in common, buddy. Not just drafted eighth overall by Chicago and you by Montreal, two original six teams. You know, we had the luxury to chat, you know, back in Moncton last year. And, you know, I think you're a great human being. You're a great human being. You really are. And I really think that your passion for hockey, and the reason why I asked you about the Montreal Canadiens, because your passion for hockey goes to different levels. And Tim, I'm sorry to take your question, but I think that what's going on in your life right now and where you were drafted and your love for the game, I want you to kind of, you know, let everybody know your love for the game and what's going on right now. And I'll let Tim ask the next question. But I think that's really important because you have a love for the game that's in deep, like in the deep soul of your body, not just in your heart, but in the deep soul of your body. And does that come from your dad? Does it come from being drafted from Montreal? Like, where's that come from?
That comes from the earliest memories I have. My dad coached a junior team here, the Mount Pearl Junior Blades. I'm from a town of about probably 35,000 now. Back then it was probably 20. And so smaller on the outskirts of St. John's. And he coached the junior team 1 year to an undefeated season. They went away and won the Atlantic Championship. And then he coached the senior team. Now, senior hockey in Newfoundland is very unique. There's teams and we get imports coming in. In fact, I remember in 91, just to tell you about the league, and it's still going. We lost in the Allen Cup final last year. I didn't play anymore, but I finished a few years ago. But our team, the Clarenville Caribous, lost in the Allen Cup, which is the National Senior Championship final. That's a goal of ours. And what happens is, anyway, okay. So my dad, when he coached the junior team or senior team, I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, around there, you know, just novice Adam hockey. And my mom ran minor hockey, or scheduling. So she would always put the whatever team dad was coaching last. So if they were on 10 to 11 and there was nobody on after, me and my buddies would put our skates on. And, you know, and the guy who used to do the ice, he's a Mount Pearl legend, the Zamboni driver. His name is Tony Fonts Fowlo. And Fonts didn't, he'd wink and a nod, look the other way as long as we left everything.
Is his nickname just Fonts?
Yeah, Fonts. And remind me to take you back because this comes full circle with Fonts. But So I was getting 10 to 15 extra hours of ice a week, and it wasn't just that. I don't think it's any fluke that my group, we won all the championships there were to win. We were on the ice a lot. We had a lot of fun. But I'm an only child, and I would bounce around the dressing room. Some of my heroes earlier on, Mario Roberge played here in 91, 92. 92, 93 wins the Stanley Cup. Bill McDougall plays here for the Portobas Mariners, seeing him every weekend. The next year, he goes to Tampa Bay, plays in the minors. I can't remember. Maybe their minor league team was Atlanta. But he got 52 points in 16 playoff games, the year off coming off the Newfoundland Senior League. He set a record. So, and there's more. Robbie Forbes, Sidney Crosby's uncle, he was a great player, right? And they would pay good money here and set you up with jobs. So, you know, a lot of people chose this league over the East Coast and things. So I grew up at the rink. I remember in those days, you know, often, and if there was a day maybe that someone backed out of a practice, we'd get the phone call, Fonts or someone else, hey, there's an hour open if you guys can get up here. So I was on the ice every single day. I remember mom delivering me, like, you know, and my buddies McDonald's, and we'd just eat it and go over on the bench and come back out. Every minute that we could be on the ice, we were. So my affinity for hockey goes way back. I think being an only child really kind of helped push that into my hockey fandom into a direction that was a little bit different than my buddies, because most of them had brothers and sisters. And my dad was, at the time, and still really, one of the only professional hockey players to ever come off the island. So I always had the pride of looking at my dad and everybody he was coaching and the players coming in, as well as a ton of ice time. And I ended up going to the Quebec Pee Wee tournament. I was rated the best player. I didn't really know until I got off the island. It wasn't like there was no social media, as you know. It was tough to get scouted. Nobody really gave Newfoundland a chance, except in 91-92, John Slaney scored the big goal for Canada in the World Juniors.
I love John. Yep.
Yeah, John's a great guy. Now,
great.
Shortly after, and I'll tell you this, shortly after he does that, he goes ninth overall. So people are going, if John Slaney went ninth, and he was real good around here, but there were players in that category. And people are going, okay, so one guy goes ninth overall, and there's nobody else in Major Junior? That's weird. So now people started to look. Now all of a sudden I go to the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament. Tri-City Americans asked me to go out west. I go out. I just have to go out there because they have to draft me, and that's the zoning rules. So I had to move. Now, did I know I was going to play junior? No. I make the junior team. I'm 14 years old. I never threw a hit before. You know how I handled that? I got in a fight my first game, and the second game, I asked the same guy to fight, and I put hot sauce on my hands and rubbed it in his eyes and got the one. That's what happened, guys. And I beat him. I lost my virginity the same night. And I said to my dad, I got to play with the visor, right? I don't think anybody's plan when I went out west, my two bantam years, were to play junior. But I did. And listen to this. The boys at Cornell was the Cornell Millionaires. And I thought I was going out to play bantam. It wasn't a stretch to play midget AAA junior, no. But when I put on the visor and I'm wheeling around and there's hitting and there's fighting and, you know, there's girls at the game, I'm going, wow, okay. I'm not going back home. I like this. And I want to play on the junior team. So the first 8 or 9 games, I don't do much, but I'm happy to be there. And guys are hurt, and, like, there's locals that I'm taking a spot from. So I thought about that at first. This is not going to go over well. But, like I said, there would either be the flu or someone would have their wisdom teeth out or there'd be injuries. So I got a chance now. About 15 games in, I start playing. Now I'm getting confidence. The end of the season, I lead the team in scoring, and I get 222 penalty minutes as a 15 or 14-year-old, a first-year bantam. And then the next year I go back, defend my scoring crown. So I'm now junior, 2 years bantam, and I've led my team in scoring. Tri-City take me third overall. Mike Barnett, Wayne Gretzky's agent, comes down, knocks on my door personally, and he says, we're going to make you, if you want to sign with IMG, we're going to make you our youngest player ever. We just signed Radek Bonk, and you will be, and I'm a year younger, and we're going to sign you. First thing my dad said, well, second or third thing, but right off the bat, he was still in the doorway. I remember saying, if you think Terry's good, you've got to go to Harbor Grace and check out Danny Cleary, because Danny was playing a little bit. So Danny goes. Danny's 14. He goes to junior in Belleville, like Trenton, I think, their affiliate.
Yeah.
He leads the team in scoring, and people are going, what? Are these kind of prospects there now? Someone that you know. Now people start, the door opens. Now I go to Tri-City. I go eighth overall. I look at the hockey news. You know, it would come out, no internet, but you'd look at the back and you'd see the names. Now there's 25 Newfoundlanders in Major Junior. Now there's four in college.
Wow.
One of them, Ryan Clough, right?
Bambi. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I played with Ryan Clough. One of my favorite teammates of all time, Ryan Clough.
And great, you know, guy.
Yes, one of the best people of all time. And, you know, I'll tell you a story about Ryan Clough at the end of the show. But also Dan Cleary, when I got traded from Chicago, I was traded with a number one draft pick and Zhamnov and Craig Mills plus some money. That number one draft pick was Dan Cleary. So I got traded. So Dan Cleary was the number one draft pick in my trade, in that legendary trade with Chicago. I don't know if you know that, but
no, I actually was aware of that. It's been a while because Danny comes home now, and we used to hang out all the time, but he spends his time in Detroit most of it. But he does come back in the summer. I knew that. I had forgotten about it. It goes back a while. Craig Mills still comes over too. I met Craig through Danny. Craig played in Belleville as well. I never played with him, but we remained friends.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know what, Terry?
Tim, it's amazing how things like
it's crazy, right? It's full circle. And Terry, I know how important senior hockey was to you and how much you played. So I grew up in New Brunswick. I know you've heard of the St. John Vitos.
Of course,
right?
Yeah, I've been there all the time. By the way, I was there for a month in this summer. I played the National Ball Hockey Championships.
Right. You know, they won the Allen Cup. They won the Allen Cup. That's where I started my refereeing experience. And you had guys, they had a team in Fredericton, and you, and one of your former teammates, Jerry Fleming, used to play for Fredericton, right? And Big Flem, you know, the senior hockey, people don't know in the rest of the world of hockey, but senior hockey in the Maritimes and in Newfoundland, back then, yeah, as you alluded to, you didn't have guys getting drafted. You didn't. You probably thought you were going to play in Newfoundland your entire career. I thought I was going to referee in New Brunswick my entire career, and it was because of senior hockey. There were a lot. You know the Kennedy boys over in PEI. They were tough sons of bitches. Like they were. It was tough hockey back then. But I want to give our listeners a little history lesson on JR, because it's really important to me, because I know the type of person you are because of where you're from. There's a documentary out there on Netflix that I've watched several times. It's called Come From Away, JR. And Come From Away is a documentary about 9/11, and Gander, Newfoundland was the only international airport that was open, and they were diverting every plane to Gander, Newfoundland. Every plane in North America was going to Gander. Well, this is a small town, and you can talk about how big it is. It's a few thousand people, right? Okay. They don't even have enough hotels to house the people. Well, this whole documentary, JR, is about how the people
sounds like New York and Chicago with the immigrants right now. Go ahead.
Well, they took in all these people that these Newfoundland people, Terry, took in all these people that didn't know them. And this whole documentary is about how they become lifelong friends. And I used to go over there and ref in the American Hockey League in the St. John's Maple Leafs, and spent many nights on Georgetown and Green Sleeves and so on. Why are the Newfies and the Newfoundland people the nicest people in the world? Like, what is it about them?
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I think there's a kind of, thanks for saying that. I'm proud to be a Newfoundlander, and that's probably one of the stories that makes me the proudest. There's also on YouTube, if you just Google that, anything with 9/11 Gander, you'll see what Tim is talking about. It'll bring you to tears. There's even a show on Broadway that's called Come From Away.
Correct.
So look, here's what I think, and I'm using my knowledge. Most of my family's from here. My dad's family, my dad's father is from a family of 12, and they're from St. Joseph's, a little bay, maybe an hour and change outside of St. John's, a real, like, you know, a fishing community. And, you know, what I think happened is over the years, we go way back, right? So it's one thing now to live here and in Canada in general and beer with the winter and all that stuff. But imagine we're the first settled community in North America from the Western world was John Guy, and that was in Cupid's in 1602. That's where Danny Cleary's from, Harbor Grace. It's called, yep, Conception Bay North. Conception Bay is a big bay. Conception Bay North is where they stay. Almost the furthest you can go in North America, so their boats would stop. Now, they would come back, and it was seasonal. John Guy stayed over here. So after that, now St. John's, now you see Southern Shore, Corner Brook. It all started to fill in, right, the population. Except think about it. For 300 years, there's no electricity, right? It's smaller communities that make their living fishing, and stories and songs and traditions, those things became fabric because it became part of survival, right? So if you still go to those bays, like the local legion, the local, you know, bingo play, yep, hall, well, probably just as popular as if there was a bar or whatever. So we've come to really rely on each other and to be social people. And in all that time, there was big time ups and big time downs, right? We always had our fish, but sometimes we were taken advantage of, if you want to use that word. For better or for worse, things weren't always great in Newfoundland, and we needed to be a resilient people. How are you going to do that? You're going to love each other. You're going to respect each other. You're going to grow together. So if you go to those communities, everybody's, you know, not everybody would be related, but they treat each other like that. You know, it's very much, I don't know, if you think about survival from a point of view of caring for each other and going through the same brutal kind of winters together, you needed something to get you there. And I think that's in our blood. And I think that's why a lot of us, your buddy Bird Dog, one of my best friends in the world, Greg Smith,
one of the greatest people in the history of the world.
Bird decided to live here. He came here to play for the St. John's Maple Leafs. and ended up being one of my best friends in the world. And he used to say that, man. And Bird was the type to wear his rubber boots out to the bar.
Do you remember Bird Dog, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Greg Smith?
He was crazy, man. He was crazy.
Listen, crazy is not the word. But not only was he crazy, he was one of the most loyal people and one of the guys that was probably the most proud and thankful that he played in the National Hockey League. And he beat people up like nobody's business. I remember playing St. Louis and Gino Cavallini slashed me in the corner, just slashed me, right, and hit me. And I came to the bench and next thing you know, Bird Dog goes like next shift right to Gino and just pounded the hell out of Gino Cavallini just for slashing me. And this guy, you know, God rest his soul. He was an amazing man. He was a warrior and one of the greatest people of all time, which now leads me to Terry. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing right now?
He's an actor. JR.
What are you doing right now? We don't play hockey at our age, and you're going back. And by the way, you look like a hockey player because there's one thing that newfies don't have is dentists, which is awesome. I love it.
There's a story there.
But tell me what's going through your life right now, because you're all over the internet. You're making waves of, you know, going to play again. How old are you now? 47 years old now?
I just turned 47, yeah, on the day of the game.
What are you doing?
So this is what happened, guys. Here, a lot had to go right. Now, my career ended way earlier than I thought, and a lot of it was due to I didn't get along with Michelle Therrien, and I it's my own fault. I didn't go back to camp. I'm rookie of the year.
Can you stop there right now? Can you stop there real quick? I can't stand Michelle Therrien.
Okay.
Wow. I can't stand Michelle Therrien. I'm going to say that right now.
Start that ball rolling, but yeah, go. A lot of people didn't go. And don't.
Before you go any further, Terry, I had it actually written down in my notes to ask you about Michelle, because him and I couldn't stand the freaking guy when I reffed him. And I actually had to, Stephen Walken, the director of officiating, on two separate occasions when Bergevin, and I liked Bergie, Bergie's a great guy, Bergie asked Stephen, can Tim please meet with Michelle before the game and try to iron out their differences? I thought he was an arrogant prick. I had no respect for him.
No, you didn't think he was. He was an arrogant prick. He is an arrogant prick.
So, guys, here's what happened, man. Like, I look back. I didn't handle it right, but I went there. I mean, I'm eighth overall. I go, and at 19, I did make the Habs. I had a bit of a concussion problem the year before, so I remember them saying, look, we're going to have you here to practice right until the junior deadline. It's 96, 97. If worse comes to worse, we got like five injuries, you're going to get in. So there were. I got four games in, and I was. He said, like, you know, I want you to hang around with Shane Corson. I want you to see Saku Koivu, Vincent Domfu. See how these guys – see what makes them tick. So that was my job. I was getting paid to play in the NHL, practice in the NHL. I warmed up every warm-up. They go, like, if you want, you can go out and warm up. I'm like, ew. People are like, oh, that sucked. You only play four games. I'm like, I'm 19. I'm on the Habs. I loved it. Right? And I played junior. I loved Tri-City. I loved Cornell. I loved Red Deer. And I never really ran into adversity when it came to – I knew when I played bad, and that happened. And I knew when I didn't give an effort. But I always had a decent relationship with the coach. I don't mean an effort, but, the coaches in the Western League at the time were big on, you know, If you've got that effort to bring, you know, guys, we got to do that. We got to go out there and play with passion. It was a big thing that kind of is losing its place, I think, a little bit. There's still some of it. But, you know, it was based on go out there, and if you try hard, then I'm at least going to respect you as a coach. So, and players, and that's the way it worked. You know, some of my peers in the league then, Shane Doan, I went eighth overall. Shane went seventh. Aguinla went 11th. You know, Lankow came out with me, Sheldon Surrey, Brian McCabe, guys like Darcy Tucker, right? I was in Montreal with him. He was my roommate. So, and guys like that, generally, you go out and try hard, and if you're a good teammate. But I think, and I just loved it. I mean, I would celebrate after goals, and like I would just do what it took just to be a good teammate and a passionate player. And a lot of it, wasn't me doing what it took. It was just me being a natural. That was me as a human. Well, I think it rubbed Michelle the wrong way. He would rather have a bunch of soldiers, you know, and tweet your own, but that really wasn't communicated well. I'll tell you this. It's one of my first meetings in Montreal, in Fredericton. I got sent down. So now I've played those that year when I'm 19, four games in the show. I get sent to junior. I set the record for three rounds. We don't make the final. I get 18 goals in 16 games in Red Deer. I didn't get in one fight. Came back. I was coming off like a bit of a concussion, like I said. So I thought, okay, Habs didn't make the playoffs. I'm coming on in, and I'm going to really do what I can to really make the team. Get sent down, fair enough. But Michelle, now we're in Fredericton. There's none of this social media. There's none of these agents calling, at least not mine. I'm like, Mike, stay out of it. You're not calling Reggie Ohl. Like, whatever. I'll take care of this on my own. I go in. He calls me in for a meeting about seven or eight games in. And says, sit down, right? So I sit down. My seat's maybe 15 feet away from his desk, and it's lower, right? There's always had to be this mental thing with Mike. So yeah. His chair's higher than mine, you know, and all this, like this whole dominant mental thing. Whatever. So he takes a cigarette and he lights it up, and he sits down and he starts staring at me. Now I go to ask him, like, why am I in here? And I said, you know what? I'm gonna let him speak first. He doesn't even tell me why I'm in here. I'm gonna let him speak. So he doesn't speak. Now I don't speak. Now it goes on. Now he's halfway done his cigarette. I'm like, okay, I can play this game. So I look at him right in the eyes, which gets really awkward. Now he's looking me right in the eyes, and I'm looking him in the eyes, and he's just puffing. He goes right down to the knob of his cigarette, puts it out, and says, get the fuck out of my office. That was it. That was the meeting. I went, what planet am I on here? Holy shit. I don't know what it is. I come out, and some of the boys, Francis Bouillon, Marc Bocage, they're like, no, he's just like that. I'm like, he's just like what, an asshole?
Right.
Oh, why? You know, and I think he thought, you know, he'd get the best out of everybody that way. And I know that was some of the mentality, but even the hardest coaches, like, there's some level of personality. There has to be.
So yeah.
Anyway, he plays me. A couple of games later, I break out of my slump. Wasn't doing much. I had, like, I don't know, maybe a goal and two assists. I get third star of the game. He calls me in his office, like right in front of me. He's happy. He's happy for me. He calls my parents right in front of me. Thanks a lot, Mike. Okay, it's going to be good. The next game, I get my first shift with 30 seconds left in the game, and he's behind me, and he goes, go fight Jeff Ware. And I went, what? And I went out and I fought him. I took my helmet, and I threw it right over in the stands on the other side of the rink. I said, go fuck yourself. I went in the room. Now my pro career has got a dark side. I've never seen this. I've never had adversity, and I don't know how to deal with it. If I ever did in junior, it was easy. Terry, you're not working hard, right? I'd rather someone tell me that, bag skate me, it's all over now. Okay, let's start from scratch. Bob Laux, Rick Carrier, Bob McCammon used to coach in Edmonton. These guys are hard coaches too, but they're not assholes. I'm going, my God. So all of a sudden, things like this would play out, and I wanted out immediately. Now, I'm not saying I didn't get results. I ended up being rookie of the year. That year, I ended up with 21 goals, 34 fights. I'm a middleweight. I lead the American League in fights. That wasn't the goal. We just had, like Jerry Fleming mentioned, Jerry was out. Dave Morissette only played like 20 games. Guys like me and Aaron Asham, who are middleweights, we had to kind of, over those 2 years, Ash came in the second year. Now we're doing a lot of it. The first year was hard, but I'm like, okay, 256 minutes, 21 goals. Again, I love Chris Nyland. So I'm like, what the hell do you want me to do? You guys aren't exactly ripping it up. And I'm going up seeing guys, you know, that I just thought I could play ahead of. Now, I get there's two-way contracts. And when I would come up, I wouldn't play a lot. But Alain Vigneault, Réjean Houle, they didn't treat me like a piece of shit. So I didn't mind it. People go, oh, you didn't play much in the NHL. I'm like, I get that part of it. But I didn't really communicate to them what was going on. So I go back for my second year, and it's more of the same shit. And I said, you know, and now all of a sudden I'm seeing my friends get traded, who I'm a peer of. I'm a first-round pick. I'm eighth overall. I'm the first pick they've had that high in 10 years. Tucker gets traded to Tampa, immediate star. Craig Conroy gets traded. Like, he's up for, like, the Selke. I'm going Jim Campbell, Valerie Bure, Thomas Bocoon. Matt Higgin, I'm going, how are all these guys? Gordy Dwyer, we had in the East Coast League. He gets traded. He plays Tampa for the next year and a half. I'm going, okay, I've seen enough. Get me the hell out of here. Now, I don't want it. So this is what went down, man. I snapped. I said, I'm not going back to camp. I called my agent, Mike Barnett, and I told him that, and, you know, he agreed, but he didn't really get me out of there. I'm not blaming him at all. It wasn't his responsibility, and I could have gone to camp. So it's my fault, but you can kind of see where I'm coming from. Now, between the jigs and reels, without getting into all of it, because it's not really necessary, I end up busting my ankle. I get a high ankle sprain as I'm sitting out, and I'm like, oh, my God, what have I done? What have I done?
How did that happen?
You know, I was in Dallas camp. I finally got traded. The next year I went down, you know, I played with the St. John's Maple Leafs, but I was on loan. Now I'm playing with the Leafs. They're Toronto's farm team, so I'm not going to play like I was in Fredericton. Like I said, I had numbers under Mike. I just didn't like him. I hated him. I hate to use that word, but I hated him. If he was here now, I'd really try to mend fences and shake his hand. I mean, I don't know what happened in 20 years, but he didn't treat me good. I'm telling you, he didn't treat me well. So I go back. I play in St. John's. I think the next year I get 28 points in 50 games, but I'm playing on the fourth line with Sean Thornton, Ryan Pepperell, some prospects. But, you know, we're mixing it up a lot.
That's a tough line.
It was a great time. I'm still playing at home, right? I'm on the St. John's Leafs. It's my home. I'm playing pro, but I'm starting to feel a little bit further away from the NHL. But teams were calling. I knew that. So I ended up the jigs and reels. The next year, same thing. I go to Colorado Springs, but a guy skates over my arm. Now I play 30 games. This was the beginning of the major injury happening. So now I can't feel my eyes. To this day, I can't feel this. I could put a nail gun through that. I can't feel it. It's pins and needles. But I kept playing. I make my way to Dallas. I get traded, I don't know, for a bag of pucks or something. But I found myself in Dallas, and it was in Dallas, and they told me they'd give me a shot. And Bob Gainey was the GM, and he told me, he said, you know, I've been paying attention. People say, why did you pick Dallas? Because I remember my agent at the time, who I changed agents, but it's a long story. I won't get into all of it. But he's like, do you want to go to Edmonton or Dallas? I can get you to either. And Cleary was going to Edmonton. I knew that. But I knew that Dallas, first of all, Don Hay was the coach in the minors, and he coached against me in my division. He coached Kamloops in junior, and he played pro with my dad. Not that you need that, but I'm like, he knows the kind of person I am.
My least favorite coach of all time.
Is who?
Don Hay, my least favorite coach of all time.
I didn't have him. I figured JR, he watched me play junior. They were in our division, Kamloops. They won 3 more cups in 5 years. So I knew that at least he knew, like, he knew that I wasn't going to be cheated out there, right? And I usually, you know, you need someone in your corner. I didn't know the guy really. But again, I knew that he knew what kind of player I was. And again, the GM's Bob Gainey, used to be captain of the Habs, one of my favorite players. But I knew that he'd been paying attention to Montreal Canadiens. So I'm like, okay, this probably makes sense to go there. So I did. And Darian Hatcher fell on my ankle in warm-up. And I knew it. I skated off. It was a high ankle sprain. But like the next day, it was the same.
Hey, Tim, it's amazing. We have so much in common because Darian Hatcher just wreaked havoc on my body too, right?
Exactly.
Seriously, yeah. Terry, like everything you're saying, there's so many similarities between you and I in our, the people we know, the things that have happened to us. But you just played a hockey game. You're 47 years old. Well, you just played a hockey game.
I'm sorry to go through all that. I guess what I'm telling you is that's. So that was the beginning of the end. I shot it with cortisone. I knew I lost a step. I wasn't a good enough skater to lose a step, and I really lost it. I mean, it's still restrictive, but it doesn't hurt anymore. But 3 or 4 years, I just couldn't skate the same, and I knew it. So I shot it with cortisone. I picked my 3 favorite minor league cities. I said, if I'm going out, I'm going to play in Boise, Idaho, Cincinnati, Ohio, and Orlando, Florida. Screw it. And I finished in Orlando with the Atlantic Coast League. We won. I was a long
– That's where I am right now. That's where I am right now. I'm here for the Solar Bears. The Solar Bears, right? I'm here right now. Yep.
I'll be there with my daughter in February 8th to the 12th. I'm taking her to Disneyland. My old owner there. Again, all this isn't bad. My old owner, David Waronker, he's meeting me there. He's since moved to Arizona. We're going to hang out. I had a great time during this. It was hard to close my NHL dreams, and I knew that I should have gone back to that camp, you know?
Yeah, but why at 47 years old – are you going back to play again? Like, well, what's going through your brain?
So, Terry, before you answer this, I saw you know, obviously you in the dressing room, and I see Matt Cook as the coach out there.
Yeah.
And I refereed Cookie his entire career, and Cookie looks like he's eaten a lot of cookies over the last couple of years.
Hey, let's not do fat jokes. Look, I look like I've been bit by a swarm of ticks. Well,
that's a good way to put it, though, because, guys, that's probably where I would have gone with it. But now I love, like you brought up passion, I love it. Now, after a couple of years, I can still play senior, though, and the national ball hockey team phones. And they're like, you know, George Gortzos, God love him, man. Because he called and he said, look, and I could still run. It didn't really restrict me when I ran. It was way better. So I did what I could. I made the national team. I played for 12 or 13 years on the national team. And then even in September, we just won the Masters World Championship, the over 34. That became a big part of my life. Now I played senior hockey, 24-game schedule, a lot slower. Now I can still be an athlete, albeit an amateur one. Now this brings us to what happened. So these guys, St. John's has five locals playing for it, the Newfoundland Growler, which is unique in that league, but a lot of guys love playing here, and they're good friends of mine. We've been to national championships together, ball hockey. We've been to world championships as Team Canada. I skate with them all summer, and I just stopped playing senior 2 years ago. So January 10th is the deadline. You can't pick from senior anymore unless – so these guys that sign with their teams, their goal is to go to the Allen Cup. They don't want to waste the game playing one game of pro and not be able to go back. They take senior hockey seriously here. So that cut off six teams worth of guys that just came back from pro, major, junior, college, whatever it be, good hockey players. Like I said, we lost the final last year in the Allen Cup. The whole team could have played one game pro, but they weren't available. Now, boys know I've been skating with them. It's also all of this happened. The flu went around, and there's injuries on Saturday night. It's a Sunday afternoon game. So there's no flights in the morning from anywhere on the mainland.
Right.
To get anybody worthwhile. So now all of a sudden, who are we going to pick? We literally don't have enough to go out there. We only have 9-10 forwards. So 9 forwards, 10 with me. So I got the call. Guys, I'm a Growlers fan. I was down to the game supporting my buddies. I go to all of them if I'm in town and I have the time, which is a lot.
What bar were you at Friday night in Newfoundland for your birthday when you got the call?
I was here at my house. I like watching old videos of whatever, music and then hockey, whatever it be, have a few beers. Then I went to the game, had a few more. Then I went to Greensleeves, where me and Bird Dog used to be.
One of my favorite places.
Yeah, that's still the hockey bar. My good buddies run it, and my ex-wife actually works there, my daughter's mother, and so runs it. So we went over there. Then I went to Blue on Water. So I'm talking, I don't know. I said 5-6 pints on TV. If you really think about it, it's at least 10. Like, I've been drinking for 8 hours. I'm going, whoa. So Zach O'Brien calls. I said, you got to be kidding me. Hang up. Adam Party calls. There's an NHLer for a while. Came back.
Yeah.
1 year. Yep. Growlers. They won the championship. Now he's assistant coach. And he says, T-Bone, I'm serious. We actually need you. He goes, this isn't a publicity stunt. He goes, I know you can skate. I know you're in shape, and we're desperate. So I start going, okay, this is wild.
Wow.
First thing, I went out. I got a cab home immediately, drank like 4 or 5 liters of water, had a sandwich. Couldn't sleep because I'm so nervous. I'm so – well, nervous energy, not like nervous like you know, it's really going to happen. Right? So my daughter, she calls in the morning, or I called her. I can't remember, but – I said, you know, I'm going to do this. She's like, yeah, you got to do this. And look, since I want to say one thing before I go further, all that happened in Montreal. I know my career didn't turn out like I wanted it to, but that happened in the past. Rajon Houle, who was the GM then, he gets us tickets. He took my daughter to the game last year. We went down. It's all water under the bridge. Life is life. I get it. I was a hot-headed kid. I didn't appreciate Tyrion. I still don't, but it's all in the past. Rajon Houle treated me like a person. Okay, Reggie, I think you should have played me more, but what am I going to do now? We're talking 2 decades ago, right? So it's fine. Like, I'm proud to be a Montreal Canadian. And we went up last year, my daughter and I, she loved it. We go down to the games, but now it's real. I'm like, yeah, these guys like are affiliated with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who we watched last year in Montreal. I'm going to play with them. She's like, no way. So I went, okay, I got to do this. I went to the rink, 12:30. I just wanted to, I said yes, but I was still going, am I really going to do this? I went down. And I thought about it. I kept myself in good shape, getting at what you guys were saying. If I didn't, there's no way that it could have happened. But I've done that over the years. And I went out, so I said, you know I have the cardio to survive out there one game, but am I going to be able to keep up anymore? It's still, the game's gotten faster. I know it's the East Coast.
Exactly.
Always a decent, he's still professional, and they're fast players, right? So I knew, I'm like, okay, the cardio is one thing, but I got to keep up. But, you know, it's, Matt Cook didn't have to play me. And I respect him. I know there was times a lot of people would say, you know, he was a cheap shot or he was a weak. Look, we do share a passion for the game. He wouldn't be like that if he didn't have a passion for it. So I do respect Matt as a player, as a coach, and this was wild. So before the game, I just tried to say everybody, I'm like, boys, look, I don't want to steal any show here. I don't want to be a sideshow, but there's going to be an elephant in the room the whole game. It's the way it is. And but let's go out and try to win. I went out for a warm-up, and I look up, and now I'm seeing people like from the film world, from university that I went to school with in kindergarten. It's not just hockey fans. It became I hate to keep using this analogy, but it was like the ending of the movie Big Fish. It was people from all over that had all these TR stories, but they'd never met each other, and now they're all in one room to share it with me. And I look, and Cookie says, "You're starting." I'm like, "No way!"
That's awesome. I love that he did that, Terry.
Love that he did it. I was kind of nervous, but I tell you this, boys, when the game started right off the bat, the puck went over, and a guy got rid of it, and I kind of gave him a jolt. And the place, you know, you could hear him come alive. And I had to make two hockey IQ plays right away in the corner. And when I made them, and then, you know, and the puck went all the way down, all the way back, and I had to do like two length, and I could keep up. And I really, it started to be, the boys were like riding a bike. I'd compare it more to riding a roller coaster because it was adrenaline. I was getting off on it. I'm like, I can do this. Wild. Like, you know, I'm going around. I'm playing. I'm in a pro hockey game. Now, the thing is.
Yeah, but I'm sure, Terry, I'm sure, and I want you to talk about this open and freely. I'm sure there were people that said, why are you doing this? And you're getting some feedback on why you're doing this. And by the way, your passion for that, and I love Cookie for giving you that. But what do you say to the people that are saying negative things about what you did? I mean, it's an amazing story. There should be nothing negative on it. So what do you say to the people that are saying something negative on it, which I can't stand?
Well, it's easier to talk to them now that I've done it than it was before, because I can say that I played. And not only did that happen, it was like, I think a lot of people thought it was a publicity stunt. It happened on my birthday. So I know what they're thinking, right? I get it that some people are saying that. And I read some comments before and I said, I'm not going to touch my phone anymore. I can't believe that anybody's making a negative out of this. And that's why it dawned on me before the game. And I said to the guys, I'm like, look, boys, I'm here to be a teammate. You ask me why? I played because they're my friends. The guy I stuck up for and got in that fight, that's James Melindy. He was the captain here for years. He's a great Newfoundland legend. He is a firefighter. He only plays the home games because they need him, and they need him this year. And he came from the fire hall, okay? And he gets run in the corner or close to, and I just look and his helmet had popped off. Why did any of it happen? Because I'm a hockey player. Like, they hired me to do a job. And as the game's going on, I'm figuring I can do it. I can do this. So, you know, I didn't – in the second period, I was up three times. I didn't get out there because of penalty kill and power play, special teams. But the third period, he got me out there like a lot, five or six times. It's a whirlwind. But he played me regular. And now, by the time I got out there, when I got in a fight, like – that wasn't put on. Guys, if I get in a fight early in that game, I know what all my buddies are thinking. Oh, you're going to do it. Look, I would have loved to do it early in the game for a little bit of fun to challenge myself to put on a show. Yeah, what if I lose and we get scored? We get scored on, sorry. You know, again, they hired me to do a reason. I still got it. Whether it's 1997 or 2024, in my mind, I'm like, you know, this isn't a publicity stunt like a lot of these people think it is. And Pards knew. I've gone to war with them. I've gone to national championships with these guys and worlds, played in ball hockey. It might be ball hockey. But when you're in overtime and you're playing USA in a world final, you know, it's still you're a player. You're in that moment. You'll bond with these people. And there's five of them on that team. Todd Skirving, Jordan Escott, Zach Boyer, Adam Daw, and James Melindy are all from here, and they're all friends. Now, like I said, Melindy is the heart and soul of that team and has been for years. And now he's a firefighter. So when I got out there and I saw him get run and his helmet go out, and I hadn't seen that in years. It just took guys. I swear to you, I didn't put that on. I chased down Walker. I slashed the back and I said, we're going. And he turned around. He didn't have to do this. He helped me create the moment, right? I knocked on the door afterwards, as a lot of us did back in the day, and I shook his hand. He thought, he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, really? Like Ty Domi did when I fought Ty Domi when I was 18, he did that to me, you know? And we fought two more times. It's not like he gave me a free pass. Bird Dog was like that. He'd root me on the ice, but we were friends off of it. And I think people are losing that a little bit too, right? So,
Jerry, it's in your DNA, buddy. It's in your DNA. Like our social media, we sent out a tweet a couple days ago about, you know, that you're coming on the show, and it was a fight with you and Matthew Barnaby. And yes. and I'm telling you, man, you guys were throwing them. And I'm sure Barney was like, who the hell is this kid? Because that's your DNA. That's who you are. It wasn't put on it. You're an ultimate teammate. That's why you're loved by everybody. That's who you are. So I'm going to cut you guys off. I'm going to ask you two questions because we had some people call or ask a couple questions. And JR, the first one's for you. And is this story true that you're in Vancouver 2006 and Gretzky scratches you from the lineup and you left the rink and went out and had dinner?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I was so mad. I was coming off an injury, and I said I could play, and I was ready to play. And they scratched me just after warm up, and I was so mad. I rode the bike, and you know when you have to ride the bike, you have to do what you have to do after the game. And then my buddy Mike Hudson, who was my first roommate of all time as a Chicago Blackhawk, he lived in Vancouver, and he was coming to the game. And I said, "Hey, Mike, I'm not playing tonight. Let's just go for dinner." And we went to the Keg. And we sat at the bar at the Keg during the game, and I watched the Coyotes versus Vancouver at the Keg, and somebody tweets Jeremy Roenick in the bar watching the hockey game, and I'm having a couple cocktails with Mike Hudson. Then I get back, and then they tell me that you're not supposed to leave the arena when you're not playing. You're supposed to be in the press box. Well, I didn't know that. There's no rules. And then they said it's an unwritten rule, and they were going to suspend me for two games because I left and went to have dinner. And by the way, I gave the Keg. That story was all over Canadian news, all over the place, from coast to coast. And I should be getting free steaks from the Keg for the rest of my life for the amount of publicity that I gave
at
them.
Least,
they're free
at
advertising. So then I went to Gretz. I went into his office, and Gretz goes, you know, it's a stupid rule. I said, Gretz, it's not a rule. I said, either it's a rule or it's not a rule. Like, screw this unwritten BS. Like, are you kidding me? Either it's a rule or it's not a rule. And I went to dinner. I wasn't playing. I don't have to be in the press box. Go F yourself.
So, I'm just impressed that you didn't go to the Roxy, that you went to the Keg instead. That's what's most impressive. But TR, one of our viewers and listeners, do you have a story about when you were getting drafted? Did you meet with different coaches? Like, did you meet with Milbury?
So I go to the draft. It's in Edmonton. I'm the only Newfoundlander still to ever play in the Western League. So, and a lot, Edmonton has a lot of transplanted Newfoundlanders, first of all, a lot of the similar kind of people. And, they were all out in full force, and to all my WHL games. I played in Red Deer my last year of the Dub. So, you know, I have an affinity for Edmonton, and it goes way, way back. I have relatives there since I'm 2 years old. So the draft happens, or it's happening in Edmonton. And I've been around. People think that whole combine thing started in the 2000s. We didn't have a combine, but we would have to check in. I had to fly to Halifax, go to the university, go through all the testing. And we would generally fly down. I remember flying to a lot of teams, or they would come here. I was interviewed. I think there was 26 teams in the league at the time, and I was interviewed by, say, 23 of them. So, oddly enough, Montreal wasn't one of them. So they're doing – a lot of the teams go to the draft, and they're doing them out of the hotel, okay? So – now, it wasn't just guys. So Lankow gets – he's playing on my line. He goes fifth overall. I go eighth. Brian Boucher is our goalie. He goes 21st. So three of us were rated in the first round and ended up going. And that's something nice from our team in Tri-City. I mean, that doesn't happen all the time, right? People were embracing it. A lot of our players were from Edmonton. So there was just a lot going on. But I did every interview, and, you know, I'm certainly I told my agent I'm available for all of it. Except it was like a day after they were done. And we were all getting ready to go out a keg or somewhere like that. It ended up being Cowboys at the end. But it was the night before the draft. And there was a lot going on. And Mike Barnett called me last minute. And he's like, there's two more interviews to do, if you don't mind. The Islanders want to see you in the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, the Islanders were picking first and like 28th. So I just didn't understand why they even wanted to see me. But
right,
Mike, I'll do it because I'm a gracious player. And I can't imagine saying that I'm going to turn down an interview with the Islanders at any other point in my life. But I'm ready to go meet my buddies and everything. And I know this is going to take a while. So just please note that I'm doing this and tell them that I'm going out of my way because, you know, it is a bit of a monkey wrench tonight. But whatever. So I go to the meeting. And I go in. I sit down and it's a business kind of setting. You know, those big oval tables, like, you know, there's a room that's connected to like four other rooms. It's like a conference room. So people are lined. The only two seats available are the heads of the table. So, and Milbury's not even in the room. So I come in, I sit down, and the scouts are really buttering me up. You know, they're going, you know, great, awesome, 50 goals, 200 penalty minutes. You know, like we're really looking at you. And I knew they weren't, though, because they're picking first. They'd end up taking Brian Berard. And for good reason, great player. So I'm in there, and now my ego's inflating because these aren't even really questions. They're statements. Okay, yes, I'm a great player, wicked. So I can hear the footsteps. Door opens, and it's Milbury. And he's sitting there, and he's got a notepad like he's looking at something. You know, are you still looking at notes? I mean, right, I'm here. Like, you must know. The draft's tomorrow. Do you need to know anything about me? Who's not going overall? So he's there, and he's looking, going, yeah. And he goes, well, I think you skate faster with the puck than without it. I said, okay. And I'm going, is he complimenting me right now? I don't know. Turns out no, but I'm going, isn't that something that's good? I said, okay. And he goes, well, it's a good thing you played with Damon Lankow because you wouldn't have had all those points. I went from 33 points to 110, but Lanks went from like 50 to 140. So I said, well, it's a good thing he played with me or he wouldn't have had 140. And, you know, and there was a little chuckle. And he goes, well, and I had a good fight against, I believe it was Wade Bielak. I know it was one of them, and I believe he quoted it. And he,
God bless Wade Bielak. God bless Wade Bielak.
Said
it. God,
we were buddies. Yeah, we were buddies.
God bless him. God bless him.
So he says, 9 out of 10, you're never going to have a fight. It's on YouTube somewhere. He said, you're never going to have a fight like that with Wade Bielak. And I said, but I did. And here we are. So he said, well, okay, tough guy. And actually, before that, I say, Mr. Milbury, you're picking number one where I know I'm not going. And you're picking number 27 where I sure as fuck know I'm not going.
Right.
So I say, I don't even know why I'm in the room. And you seem to not like me as a player, which is fine. But I'd like to go to dinner with my family now, please. And he says, okay. And I heard he was a bit of a dick, but I don't hold anything against him. He was just being Mike Milbury. But I know he's more good than bad. But anyway, you know, he's not Michelle Therrien. So, but anyway, he says, okay, tough guy. He says, you and Lankow have been out with a couple of girls. And he called us hoodlums. He goes, you hoodlums are out in Tri-City with a couple of girls. And it's 10 to 11. And the one girl goes home with Damon. Your girl is on her couch. It's 10 to 11. It's a 10-minute drive home. But she spreads her legs. Curfew's at 11. 10-minute drive home. Curfew's at 11. And it's 10 to 11. And he says she's on the couch and she spreads her legs and says, fuck me, Terry. He goes, what do you do? And at this point, and I got like a thing of water and I just take a sip and I go, well, Mike, not calling him Mr. Milbury anymore. Well, Mike, I fuck her for 5 minutes and then I speed home. And so the boys at the table fucking howled. And he, in one way or another, says, okay, meeting's over. I'm like, okay, now I get up, boys, get out of the room. I don't even realize this. Phil Esposito is my next interview with Tampa. He's standing in the doorway, but I guess because he played with Milbury, so I guess they're buddies, and he was coming for the next interview, and that was my Tampa interview. So I didn't even realize that. So I got up to walk over towards the door, and he's there, and he laughs, and he winks at me. And as soon as we leave, he goes, great stuff. He goes, what did you say to him? And I told him. He goes, great stuff. And I sit down. The interview with him is only about two rooms away. I sit down, Phil Esposito, and Tony Esposito's in there, oddly enough. Must have been a scout with the team or something. And, you know, I was frantic to meet these guys. I was like, you know, let this interview go on for the next 10 hours. I'm fine. And he goes, his first question, he goes, how far apart does Napoleon sleep from his wife? I said, Phil, a bone apart. He goes, yeah, you just won yourself. And he opens the fridge and there's like subs and there's drinks and there's everything. He goes, take whatever you want. Sit down and we're going to have a real conversation. I'm like, okay. And he goes, you know what I want to know? And I'm going, no. What do you want to know? How many third period goals I got? You know, who my favorite player is and everything? He goes, no, I want to know about Damon Lankow. He goes, five is a little bit too high. We don't think you're a good enough skater, but we love you. If we were picking 10th or something, we'd pick you for sure. He goes, I want to know what kind of a guy Damon Lankow is. And I said, well, he's one of my best friends. I said, you know, we compliment each other well. You know, he's good to his girlfriend. He's a good team. He goes, Terry, what kind of a fucking guy is he? Does he pick up for the boys? Is he a good team? I go, yeah, yeah. I trust him with everything, and he's a great teammate. He goes, good. We're going to pick him tomorrow. And they did. They picked him overall, and it turned into a great memory. And if Milbury's out there, and I know he's heard iterations of this. There's no hard feelings. That was a story. And I feel and he never really – no one there really held that against me. I know it seems like a real cocky thing to say as a kid, but, you know, there was a bit of tongue-in-cheek to it, and I think they knew that.
Listen, these are the stories that we love. And, Terry, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show with us tonight. Like, you brought us to another realm of stories, another realm of hockey that everybody should learn about. And, you know, from Tim and myself, Tim, you can say what you want to say. But, Terry, I can't thank you enough for coming on and telling all those people that what you're doing is stupid. You're telling them that's not stupid. It's for the love of the game. And that's what I love about you, man. And, hey, keep pushing it. Keep pushing the trigger, because not many people can do it or have the balls to do it. And you did. And I love that about you.
Well,
right,
Tim? And you know what? Terry, I've been through my stuff. JR's been through his stuff. Nobody can write our own story except ourselves. People want to write our own story, but we're the only ones that can do it. And I admire you so much. First of all, I know what kind of person you are from people I know. And, you know, you're doing the acting now on Shoresy. I love you on there. I think it's hilarious. And is it true? Are you getting into comedy work a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Just look, these things happen, guys. It was survival for a while, man. I was bit like 7 or 8 years ago. I nearly went bankrupt. I didn't have as many people in my corner. And I'm not here to preach or give but I always stayed positive. And all that ride, I had teammates and coaches that the overwhelming majority were good people. Hockey, you know. I truly believe, I say it, I got two books out there, Tales of a First Round Nothing and Fights, Film, and Folklore. And one of the things I stress in the book, in the first one especially, in the beginning at the end, look, I think a dressing room is a microcosm for real life. If you're a leader in the dressing room, the chances are you're going to be a leader in real life one way or the other. And hockey brings us to a place. It's our common denominator. JR, yes, we got a lot in common, minus the Hall of Fame stats. The years played, yourself too, Tim. I think you got over 1,000 games, right? Yeah. Outside of that, guys, and I get it, but that's something. But there's a love of the game. There's a passion. We've all faced adversity, haven't we? Right?
Yeah. Yes.
We
all have. Yep.
And I think a lot of people can relate to that, whether hockey players or not. And to me, just the theme that keeps on trucking is that my blood is you know, I'm related to hockey, whether I like it or not. And it still creates all these opportunities. And I did stay positive. It wasn't easy to do comedy when I was nearly bankrupt, but it led to this. You know what, guys? I'll leave you with this. You know why? One of the reasons I got the role, I was 5 years on a film set as locations, as I was a production assistant, Jump How High, right? I got into stunts because Jason Momoa happened to read my book and was over here with the show Frontier, the very first show. It's on Netflix, the show's Frontier. The very first scene is me with my hands behind my back begging for my life, you know? And what they loved is that I had no tooth, and because it called for this British soldier to be beat up. And the reason I didn't have one is because I was waiting to get in the crew union. I couldn't afford to get a tooth. And because I had none, now I do that scene, but Momoa gets me in the union because you got to speak in that role. All I had to do was say, please have mercy. But now I spoke, and he gave me two stunts, and those three appearances got me in the union. Then I played a crackhead, a drug dealer, a lot of things, a gangster, things that required, you know, a guy to look, you know, the missing tooth helped. Now I'm in the union, but I'm not getting it fixed. I'm like, you know what, guys? I'm starting to get these roles. get Hitchcock, and then Jared calls back and says, I love it. I'm writing this new show called Shorzy, and I think I want you to be a part of it. Would you be available? Yes, sir, I would. And now that was the birth of
now,
Kenny Hitchcock.
And now you're a legend.
How much fun is doing that show, TR, with Morassi and all those guys? Like
unbelievable. I've been to a lot of film sets and worked on a lot of things at this point. You know, I take a job, I've worked on freaking mayonnaise commercials to hockey documentaries to movies to TV shows, a lot of them, as crew or stunts or whatever. And there's nothing as unique as Shorzy, because the main characters in Shorzy were all actual hockey players, first of all. And when we, most of the time, the day often starts, especially if we're doing hockey stuff, like in the room, right? And he's like, okay, guys, for the first 5 hours of the day, we got to put half our gear on and, you know, come up with some chirps. And here's what written, and we're going to go over it 4 or 5 times. And while we're going over it, a hockey story will come up, and some chirp might just organically. And it's all hockey stories all day, and there's unique people. You got John Nasty Morassi, one of the toughest minor leaguers ever. Jordan Nolan with 3 Stanley Cups.
I think everybody needs to go watch Shorzy. It's an amazing show. Terry, you've been amazing. I really appreciate you being on. And listen, don't ever stop going, but we gotta jump. It's been a great show. You are amazing, Tim. Like, again, great. We have the best stories from the best guys. And Terry, you just brought it. You brought it for an hour, and I really appreciate that.
Last thing I'll say, boys, I appreciate it. Now listen, I did this. I'd love to have both of you on my podcast at some point.
Absolutely.
Called Tales with TR, and it's just an hour. I'm not looking for a quote or anything. I like stories like this. And I'm very interested. I am a fan of both of yours. I really am. I'm very aware of everything you've done, JR. You were one of my favorite players for that reason, because we got so much in common. Again, other than the statistics.
Next week, Tales with TR, next week.
And Terry, we'll talk a lot about senior hockey, because I love senior hockey, man. Those guys, like you said, they worked all day. And then the guys I knew in St. John, firefighters, they worked at the docks and whatever. Then they'd go out and play that night, fight that night. We'd go to the bar after. I was reffing. We'd go to the bar after. We'd get shit-faced. They'd go to work the next day. I'd go to work. It was just fun. It was like those, honestly, those senior hockey days, people ask me, what are your favorite memories? I go, you don't understand. When I was reffing senior hockey, that was some of my favorite. Those were some of my favorite memories. Those guys are men's men. Those guys.
We're coming on next week, Terry and buddy. I can't thank you enough. Tim, great show tonight. Terry, great show. You're thanks, awesome. I love you. Hey, keep speaking the word, brother. I love you. It's another episode of Snipes. Another episode of Snipes and Stripes, sponsored by our great sponsors. Which is Bet Online and my whiskey. You got to try my whiskey, Whiskey in the Wild. We love you guys. We will see you next week. You guys are the best. Terry, I love you. Tim, I love you. I'll chat with you guys later.
Happy birthday, JR.
Thank you, guys.
Happy birthday.
I love you. Happy birthday to you, buddy.